Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina.
Acknowledge me.
And with me is my buddy, Scott Chu. Scott, what's going on?
Oh, not much. I'm finally recovering from I was just sick as heck about a day after I got back from tout.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was like 2 days where I just felt like I got hit by a truck. And then I think the main reason is because I was awake for like 36 of 40 hours or something like that.
Wow.
It was a hike, but.
You said you were driving. You left at like midnight and you drove straight through.
From
Michigan to New York.
Yeah.
12 hours. What is that? How long does it take?
Yeah, it was about 12 hours, and like an hour of it was when I was in like within 2 miles of where we had Tout Wars, because turns out driving in New York City is as bad as they say. It's awful.
Welcome to my nightmare.
Yeah.
When I tell people like what my work commute is like, you know, people from out of state, they're like, you know, they can't believe it. You know, it takes me, I live in Staten Island and I work in downtown Manhattan, right at the tip of Manhattan. And it takes me typically, you know, an hour and 15, an hour and 20 minutes to get from my home to my office. And I know some people have 10-minute commutes and everybody's, you know, working from home these days or whatnot. But just getting around New York City is very, very tough. And I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, it was prime podcast listening time, let me tell you.
Yeah.
24 hours of driving in 2 days. But, if not for commutes, no one would ever listen to this. So I don't want to knock commutes too much.
Right, exactly. Just so that we have a reference point, just want to let everyone know that we're recording this podcast on Sunday, March 26th at about 11 a.m. So lots of breaking news happening. So just in case, the podcast drops on Monday and, you know, we haven't covered something specific that happened, that's the deal, is that we're recording this on March 26th. At 11 a.m. That's a Sunday. So, yeah, so I wanted to talk about our Tout Wars experience. You know, I was in the head-to-head league that drafted a Sunday afternoon, and Todd Zola was the auctioneer. Jeff Erickson was recording all the picks. And just the whole experience, Scott, was just like, you know, just awesome for me, because I know you've been to a lot of you go to First Pitch and stuff. This was, you know, my first big gathering with, you know, the fantasy people, and just get to meet everyone. And, I met Ian Kahn, who is part of Tout, was the 2019 head-to-head champion, 2022 NL champion, and a great actor. He starred as George Washington in a show that was on AMC called Turn. And I got to talk to him for a few minutes, and he's a big, big Yankee fan. So that was a thrill for me. And I got to meet people that I had, you know, communicated with over the years on Twitter, but got to meet them in person. Just really a great experience.
Yeah, it's really fun. If you're ever in the New York area during Tout, like, anyone is really kind of, you can work it out. You can come hang out with us. You can talk to all the people that are there, because it's a great industry event, because we meet other people in the industry, but we also, you know, we get to talk to other people who like fantasy baseball.
Right.
And, you know, there's just a finite number of those people in anyone's close circle. My league was fun. It had people, you know, a couple folks I know and love. Justin Mason, Nick Pollock, of course, is in my league. But I'm in the 15 team mixed auction. So we'll talk about that a little bit, too. And just the live auction is a 4 to 5 hour gauntlet.
Yeah.
That is worth preparing for, but also it's a lot of fun, and it provides just the most ways to build the team.
Right, right. Yeah, and you could you could prepare all you want, but then there's the dynamics of the actual draft, and you know that could just throw you out of whack. But obviously it's good to be prepared. And so, like I said, I was in the head-to-head points league. Frank Stamfel from CBS Sports, two-time defending champion. If I start mentioning people, I'm going to leave people out, but it's just, you know, I sat next to Ariel Cohen, and it was great to meet him. Really a great baseball mind, really a good person. And on my left was Sky Dombrowski from the Fantastics, and just a great room. And the energy from the draft, and just it was a quick pace, and Todd Zola did a really great job in keeping the pace going. But just to give a quick recap, So, you know, like I said, head-to-head points leagues, you get a point for single, 2 points for double, 3 points for a triple, 4 points for a home run. Now, but when it comes to a home run, you're getting the 4 points from a home run and then at least one run, 1 point for an RBI and another point for a run. So very important. And then on the pitching side, wins are 7 points, as are saves. And quality starts are 3 points, and innings pitched are three. So, and so in my league, you know, hitters went for more than pitchers. Juan Soto went for $44. I believe he was the most expensive hitter. Acuna went for $40. Judge went for $39, and that's the same price I paid for one of your guys. I paid $39 for Kyle Tucker. But just in terms of my experience, you know, I think I could have did a little bit better on my pitching staff. And also just in general, Scott, I think I was a little bit timid in my bidding. I think I should have been a little bit more aggressive. I stopped bidding on some players before I should have. And then at the end of the draft, Scott, I was left with $17. So my last pick, you know, I picked up, you know, DJ LeMahieu. And I paid $17 for him because in this format,
you can't take it with you.
Exactly. So then if I put DJ LeMahieu on the IL, I get the $17 back into my fab. So it in this, you have to basically, it's smart to, you know, have $0 at the end. So that was my big thing, that I just, I wasn't aggressive enough, and I stopped bidding on players earlier than I should have.
Yeah, and I think that's an important auction sort of thing to keep in mind, is you can't take it with you. And it's okay to overpay sometimes for players that really fit your roster. You want to avoid overpaying early because it's just going to really impact your ability to be competitive with bids as you go forward in the draft. But especially in the middle rounds, it's okay to overbid a little bit. Or even sometimes early, if it's a player that really fits your strategy, that really fits what you're trying to do, or you're just a big believer, right? It's totally okay to overpay just a bit, because again, you can't take that money with you. What was the point of having good value picks if you can't then use that money to turn it into high-end picks? So, you know, I think there's the, I don't know if this is what happened to you, but I know it's happened to me before. There's this desire to get only the best values. And it's like, well, you don't need a good value on every pick.
Right.
Right. You need the best team. And to do that, you will need good values, but sometimes you'll also have to pay full freight, and that's okay.
Right. Right. And for instance, like I got good value on some players. Like I only paid $19 for Michael Harris. So, and like you said, you know, if you're getting good value on other players, that should free you up to be a little bit more aggressive in going for other players, you know, like the top guys, like, you know, Gerrit Cole or Corbin Burns or whatnot. So, just to go over real quick what my team looks like, my top two pitchers are Zach Gallen and Tristan McKenzie. They've both had horrible springs so far. Gallen, his velocity's been down a little bit, but he's the opening day starter for the Diamondbacks, and both of them are projected to get like 180, 190 strikeouts. But I got good value, I think, on guys like Pablo Lopez. You know, Joe Ryan, I paid $8 for Lopez. Joe Ryan, 16 Ks and 13 innings this spring, got him for $5. Paid $6 for Cody Senga. Jameson Taillon, I got him for $1. I didn't realize how great a spring this guy has had, Taillon. 18 Ks, 0 walks this spring. Pretty good. I paid some money for Hunter Brown, Astros' top pitching prospect, $10. And I went strong on closers. I got Jordan Romano and Camilo Doval. Doval, obviously, the closer for the Giants, and Romano, closer for the Blue Jays. So I feel I'm getting 60 saves between them as long as they're healthy, and the saves are 7 points each.
Yeah, I saw that, and I thought that was, you know, that's pretty smart. Relievers in that particular format can be tough to fill because it there's only so many of them that are actually scoring decent points. Mm-hmm. I thought you got some really nice value pitcher. You know, I did like the Eovaldi pick for $3. I thought that was good. Obviously Tyone for $1. I mean, there's no bad $1 player.
Right.
Even, you know, I've even talked about how I'm not super thrilled about Oscar Colas because I'm worried about his ability to make contact, but for $1, you bet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And, you know, so I thought that went really well. I think it's also interesting to look at how some of the position dollar values play out. And we've talked about third base a lot on this show because third base is a tough one in draft. Let's talk about the auction values for third baseman, right? Rafael Devers, 27. Arenado, 26. Riley, 25. Jose Ramirez, 39. Mm-hmm. Alex Bregman, 25. Manny Machado, 31. Bobby Witt Jr., 28. All the rest of the third basemen were basically under $10.
Right.
All of them. Like Gunnar Henderson was $8. Moncada was $1. Justin Turner was $1. Alec Bohm, who you took, is $9, who I really like in that points format.
Yes. He's been hitting home runs this spring, too. So I'm crossing my fingers. So
yeah. Ariel got, I think, just an amazing value on Yandy Diaz in that format for $4. Mm-hmm. Likely because he comes up late when everyone's kind of set at third base. Mm-hmm. Matt Chapman, only $9. And it just continues to speak to how third base plays out. There's the haves and the have nots. And the more drafts I do, the more I wind up in the have nots. As much as I talked about how I was going to really prioritize getting one of these early third basemen, sometimes you're just not in a position to do that. And so if you're still, you know, I'm sure a lot of you will be done with your drafts by the time we're off the show. The first thing I'd be thinking about is what do I do at third base if my guy goes down? Right. Because it was a thin position in the draft. And that means the waiver wire is really thin. And I think you should really be looking at your waiver wire right now to know what third baseman you will take if yours currently goes down. Because if you don't, I mean, that is a position where I think people will really scramble if they lose, you know, if they lose a player. It's at third base. So really look at that. I think there's one player I was looking to see where he wound up, and I don't even know if I see him. How did it go with the St. Louis Cardinals, Jordan Walker? There he was. Only $5. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just got news that he made the team. Yeah, $5 for Walker. And I thought I also got, I mean, I was happy to pick up Max Muncy in this format because it's not a batting average really doesn't matter. Home runs count, and I think he could hit 30. We spoke about him when we did our position previews. Not only that, but, you know, he'll walk, you know, 75 to 90 times this season as well. And being second base and third base eligible, he's basically eligible all over the infield.
Yeah, I really like Max Muncy. He's one of these guys who, when you talk about Max Muncy, what's really nice about him was how easy of a narrative he had to understand why his season went the way it did. A lot of times we're left scratching our head about why a player's season wound up one way or another. Max Muncy's is easy, right? Mm-hmm. Starts the season hurt. He isn't striking out necessarily more or anything. He's just making bad contact, probably because his elbow is still all messed up.
Sure.
Or shoulder or whatever it was. Something in his upper body was all messed up.
Mm-hmm.
As he gets healthier, the stats get better. Right. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the season, he looks like regular Max Muncy. You can't ask for a cleaner narrative. Is that exactly what happened? Maybe, maybe not. But holy cow, is that a clean narrative that makes a lot of sense and should make you feel really good heading into 2023 about what Max Muncy can do? I think $13. One, suggests that people in that league know how good he is in that league. Mm-hmm. And also, too, still a good value. It's not like, I mean, 20 would have been a lot.
Right.
But 13, I mean, other players in that range would be like Christian Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's another thing at auction to do is at some point your auction is no longer really going to follow the values you have coming in. And you're going to need to be able to make adjustments to those values based on how things are really shaping out in your league. I know that in mine, in that auction, saves became really, really expensive. So if you wanted them, you had to adjust your values on closers. Otherwise, you just weren't going to get them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, there was no value bidding going on. People just were willing to pay that much more for closers. So that's something that has to happen as you go. And I think just looking at the other players in this draft that go for $12 or $13, I'm all over Max Muncy.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, just a great experience, a learning experience for me. You know, there's something about being in the room with your league mates and bidding against each other gives you a sense of energy. But also in the beginning, you know, I just wanted to get that first winning bid in, you know, just under my under my belt. And, you know, I thought of you when I got Kyle Tucker, because I know he's one of your big guys. And the night before, the name Mookie Betts came to me. Like, I just got a feeling that I had to have Mookie Betts, and I had to win the bid on him the next day. With the news that he's going to be playing some second base this season, he's probably going to gain second base eligibility at some point this season. So he was somebody that I was targeting as well. Got him for $35. You know, I think I got him for what he's worth.
Yeah, probably not many drafts going on after this airs, but in Yahoo formats where Mookie Betts is already second base eligible, it really changes his value.
Yeah.
Simply because that eligibility is huge. That position, especially in like a Yahoo format, which is three outfielders and just the first, second, third, second base is just that much more shallow. So him being at he's the number one, especially with Jose Altuve going down, he's the number one second baseman by a mile.
Yeah.
So that's something to also sort of keep in mind is what position, you know, what players are going to gain eligibility going forward. This is a great time to be looking at tools like Roster Resource, and you know, lineup trackers and things like that, just to see like where are people playing? Like, are they playing in other positions? What players do we know will get more eligibility? Like Shea Langeliers will get catcher eligibility within about the first 2 weeks of the season in most leagues.
Right.
Maybe 2.5. So, you know, he's a player who you probably don't want starting as your utility, but the moment he gets that catcher eligibility, if he's on the wire, he's certainly worth looking at.
Right. So why don't we at this point take a quick break? Then I want to, get your take on what your Tout Wars experience was and your draft. We'll get to that right after this. All right, we're back on Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina. He is Scott Chu. And Scott, you were in the 15 team roto auction draft. Our draft wasn't covered by Sirius, but yours was. So we started at about 2:30. We were done before 7. So, I mean, we weren't like limited to, you know, following Sirius's, you know, commercial breaks and whatnot. So our draft just really went really quickly. But, your guys' draft was covered by Sirius, and a couple of the announcers were liking the way you started off your draft. So tell me about, you know, just in terms of what your experience was like.
I'll tell you this. I started slow in that I didn't take most of the early players that went up on the board. In fact, I only have one player over $30 on this roster, which the way the auction values work in a 15 team league do change it up. There's a lot of teams that don't have many players over $30, but you know, it was something where I didn't spend more than 31 on any single player. And I have a much more balanced roster than maybe I even intended on going in. Players dry up fast in these 15 teamers. So that can be tough.
Yeah.
It's the same amount of money, but a lot more teams. So a lot fewer players. I am happy that all of the players I have are basically, you know, confirmed most everyday players, except for maybe Isak Paredes,
he's your guy. Yeah.
I like Isak Paredes. Yeah. I like that. I can spend $2 and get a guy who can fill in, you know, first, second, third, which also means corner and middle infield. You have a really short bench, so it makes a big difference to get players who can fill all those different spots. So it felt good. My outfield is not as good as I hoped, right? 15 team leagues, 5 outfielders.
That's tough. That's a lot to get 5 good outfielders in a 15 teamer. So
yeah, and I don't know if there's any team. I mean, there's a couple that probably, you know, Doug Anderson has mostly 5 outfielders I really like. I'm not crazy about Esteury Ruiz, but he got a great price for him for $2. Mm-hmm. A couple other teams did do like the sort of budget outfield. Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. He has, you know, 4 outfielders that are less than $10.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and, you know, Jeff Zimmerman played all value in his outfield, right? I mean, right. He has Masataka Yoshida and then Jorge Soler, Austin Meadows, Lane Thomas, Jose Siri. Something Jeff Zimmerman did was he did save his money a bit early on. You'll notice he doesn't have any players more than $25.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people, there's probably people out there going like, we don't want to hear about your drafts. What I will say about some of these tout drafts is go look and see what people were willing to pay for a player. Go and look and see how people built their teams in these auctions, because Jeff Zimmerman is a guy, you know, who I respect a great deal. He's brilliant. He has great strategies when it comes to these auctions. So seeing him come in and just the way he did this, I mean, I'm sure he'd like to get the $17 back from Rhys Hoskins. We did this before the injury. It was interesting to see that he was willing to pay up for two top catchers, right? Mm-hmm. So he goes 22 on Dalton Varsho and 20 on MJ Melendez. No one else really did that. Nobody went $20 on two different catchers, mm-hmm. right? In fact, only three catchers went for $20 and he has two of them. So that's really interesting to me. And it sort of makes me rethink about how maybe I went into it. Right. I mean, I was glad to get Will Smith for 18. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. But you know, why did he want two good catchers so badly? Right. So that's definitely something I'm going to be looking into. Two catcher leagues can be kind of tougher to navigate. So we'll see how it all goes out. You will see several teams go with the pseudo no catcher strategy.
Right.
Right. Where, you know, Austin Nola plus Nick Fortes for Kev. I can't remember. I can't remember how to say his last name, but Masarijan, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, he went.
Apologize, Kev.
Yeah. CJ Kaltenbach went with Max Stassi and Logan Ohapi, mm-hmm. which is basically zero catcher, right? They're both on the same team. Brett Sayer went with two $1 catchers. Zach Steinhorn went for a $2 and $1 catcher. So interesting to see the way that those strategy. I'm kind of curious to see how those strategies play out. And right. did it work out to get no catchers, especially with the way the depth at the top of catcher is really getting stronger and stronger. It went right. from there being two or three good catchers to now, I mean, tons of catchers went for more than $15 in this. Tyler Stevenson, Will Smith, Alejandro Kirk, Dalton Varsho, MJ Melendez, Sean Murphy went for 14, Sal Perez went for 14, JT Realmuto for 26, and Wilson Contreras for 18. Like they're, William Contreras went for 13. So, mm-hmm. I mean, lots of catchers demanding double digit dollars, which just isn't something we've seen as much in the past. It's really right. changing the way that position kind of plays out.
Yeah. Gary and Thorne also paid a lot for his catchers. Got two really good ones as well. JT Realmuto for 26 and Salvador Perez for 14. So you're right. Is when you look at the way that the draft played out, you have some that, you know, paid a buck each for their catchers, and then a couple others that really went all in on their catchers. So we'll see how it works. So yeah. I mean, I was listening to some of the draft, and Justin Mason, I think he was the last drafter to actually, you know, pick someone, win a bid, and then he finished before everyone else. So I mean, there's a guy who really knows, you know, who we wanted and what, you know, that's impressive that, you know, he waited and waited and waited, and then just, you know, once he got into attack mode, just drafted his team and was done.
Yeah, I mean, I love Justin. I've known him for a while now, and I did steal Cedric Mullins from him and probably paid an extra $1 or $2 that I didn't need to. Mm-hmm. This is an OBP league. So that's something I should point out. The Tout Wars mixed 15 team is an OBP league. I paid $23 for Corbin Burns I've $23 for Cedric Mullins, who Justin has just always been really high on. Mm-hmm. And it felt good to take him from him. And that's something in an auction that you might got to save an extra dollar or two just to kind of make your friends mad. Yeah. It's worth every penny. The other thing I did want to mention in this auction is closer, right? We talked mm-hmm. about how closers in this league, I mean, the prices got hot and heavy early right. on. Catchers going for, you know, $20 a pop. I just decided not to. I ended up with Jose Leclerc and Paul Sewald for a total of $7.
I was just looking at that, and I thought you got really good value. And I think that, you know, Leclerc is going to open the season as the Rangers closer. And so for $2, I mean, that's fantastic. And everyone's talking about Andrés Muñoz and that he's going to be stealing save opportunities from Seawald. But I was listening to an interview with the I think his last name is DiPaolo, the Mariners GM. And he kind of said that pretty much it seems that they're going to do what they did last year. And I think Seawald will probably be the main guy there. I mean, Muñoz is going to get his save opportunities. But I think you got, 20 saves at least from Seawald for $5.
Yeah, especially when you look at other players, who are in that sort of role, which would be like Pete Fairbanks. He went for 12. Muñoz himself goes for 11. Joan Duran goes for 9. So to get Paul Sewald, who could have lost the closing job last year, but didn't.
Right.
To get him for 5, I think felt like a really big win. Other closer, a closer who goes late in drafts, who isn't getting a lot of look, and who I think has got a very safe hold on this job, is the guy that Jeff Zimmerman took for $4, and that's Kyle Finnegan. And Kyle Finnegan is a guy being overlooked as someone who maybe won't have the amazing ratios, but they won't hurt you. He's not going to strike out 15 guys per 9, but he should get 8 or 9 strikeouts per nine, decent. And, he goes for $4 in this auction, and he goes almost undrafted in a lot of 12-team leagues. So I think he's someone that if he's on your wire right now, especially in these weekly leagues where you might find yourself down by a save or two, the Nats aren't going to win a ton of games, but when they have winnable games, they're going to be close. Right? This isn't a team that's going to blow a lot of teams out. So when they win, they're going to need Kyle Finnegan. I thought he did just fine to close the year last year. He's someone who I really think you should look at towards the end of drafts to look at. Another guy who went for $1 by Brett Say. He got Ronaldo Lopez for $1. And the thing with Ronaldo Lopez is I like his stuff. I think that he's going to be in the mix for saves there. I think he's a great watch list candidate, Ronaldo Lopez. But this is also an opportunity to mention that Liam Hendricks has gotten good news so far in his recovery. He may not be back till the All-Star break, but it's not out of the question he comes back in May or June. So what I'd say is I love getting Ronaldo Lopez for $1, but don't get caught up in any bidding wars on the Chicago White Sox replacement closers, because one, it's a messy picture, and two, they might not have that job for as long as we thought originally.
Yep. See, David Robertson went for $6, which, look, Mets are going to win a ton of games this year. And at least for the start of the season, I think he's going to be the number one guy there. I mean, everyone's talking Ottavino and whatnot. I think Ottavino, he does better as a setup guy. Yeah, he's going to get his opportunities. But I think Robertson, at least for the first month or so of the season, until the Mets could maybe put together some kind of a trade or something, I think Robertson for $6 is a good deal.
I'm not even sure they will trade. They've got two guys with closing experience in the back end of this bullpen. They've got good stuff. I think one of these two, I think it's worth at least late in drafts grabbing one of them, right? I do think Robertson is sort of moving up just a little bit. People are recognizing that he might be the guy instead of Ottavino. But again, as long as you're not paying too much, you go for either one. And April's going to be a time when closer roles just get nuts, right? I can't even remember his name right now, but the guy who got the first two saves last year for the Toronto Blue Jays, he got like two saves over the course of a weekend, then didn't get a save again for like the rest of the season. He dealt with injuries, all these other things, but he was, the Fab went crazy for him. Julian Merriweather was his name. He just got lost off waivers to the Cubs earlier this offseason, but like it was nuts. The Fab in, the thing with closers, if you didn't, if you decided you're going to get closers off the waiver wire or in Fab, nothing against that strategy. Don't do it in the first 2 weeks of April, right? Because we always think we're really sure of things early in April. We see huge overreactions in the save market in April. So just be really careful as you're bidding these first couple of waivers in April, especially with closers. Just be really careful. Let Julian Merriweather be a warning bell for you. That stuff does happen. And as good as a guy looks, that doesn't mean they win the job. mm-hmm. right? Teams are managing their bullpens early. They are getting their, you know, they're getting players in game action, right? Mm-hmm. If, you know, if Jose Leclerc doesn't get the first two saves for Texas, don't cut him yet.
Right.
Right. Just give it a little bit of time. Saves are super fluky. They're really situational. Really make sure if you really are believing that someone's lost a job, make sure you look and that they didn't pitch earlier in a tougher situation. Again, it's an extremely situational role. So really just keep your eye on what's going on.
Yeah, take a look at box scores too, because if you just see that, you know, someone got a save out of nowhere, and he picked up the save in the 10th inning, you know, maybe the closer went in, you know, in the 9th inning, and then, you know, the game went into over, you know, into extra innings, and then, you know, it just might be a situational thing. So take a look at box scores and see when managers are bringing in and their relief pitchers and whatnot. And I was going to talk about him later, but Rossiel Iglesias, right? The presumed Braves closer was shut down for a week because of low-grade shoulder inflammation. So it's looking like AJ Minter is going to be the guy there, but they also have a couple. They have a deep bullpen with Joe Jimenez and Colin McHugh. But if you're going to talk like you know, just like somebody to keep in your back pocket, take a look at Scott McGuff for the Diamondbacks, right? You spell his name MCGOUGH in case you're looking for him. Gaining some traction, could be in line for save opportunities for the Diamondbacks, who really haven't named a closer as of yet. You look at what this guy has done so far in spring training, 9 strikeouts, 2 walks, but has had 69 saves in his last 2 seasons closing in Japan. So always good to keep these relievers on your watch list, because especially with closers, it's just a continuing, it's just evolves so quickly.
Yeah, a lot of guys in Arizona who may or may not win a job, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, Roster Resource lists 4 potential closers for the Diamondbacks. Right. Kevin Ginkle, right. Andrew Chafin, Miguel Castro, Scott McGo. I like McGo maybe the best of them.
Right.
I think it's going to be tough for Chafin, who's a lefty, to sort of win that role. Only one of them had, or really none of them are projected for more than 10 saves. I think some places have Ginkle because he's at the top of that list right now, but that's a big question mark. To go back to what I was saying, don't overreact to any of this in April, but keep an eye on it, right? Mm. And maybe you can, if McGo's on your watch list, that gives you the chance to scoop him up early,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially, you know, if you're trying to play that game, it's going to be tough. I mean, replacing closers at this stage of the year, this is the most expensive time to do it.
Right.
Which really stinks. So we know that, you know, we have another podcast on the network that with the great Rick Graham that talks about relievers in more detail. I'd say the situations I'm watching the closest are Arizona, Chicago between Michael Fulmer, Brad Boxberger, and Brandon Hughes. I mm-hmm. think that one is really, really tight. I'm interested to see if Clay Holmes keeps that job in New York. I think mm-hmm. he probably should, but he was not their first choice last season. So if he struggles early, I'd be a little concerned. I'd want to see what Michael King or maybe Jonathan Loaisiga bring to the table. Probably more like King. Yeah. But
I think he opens up. Holmes does as the Yankees.
Oh, closer. He does. No, yeah. No doubt about it.
No doubt. Yeah.
There's a five. I mean, we talked about it a little bit already. It's a 5-man closer rotation for now in Chicago on the south side with the White Sox.
Yeah.
Between
yeah.
Graveman, Bummer, Kelly, Ronaldo Lopez, Diekman, and Jose Ruiz. I definitely think it's probably Graveman. It's yeah. really more of a 3-man race to me with Graveman, Bummer, and Lopez. Mm-hmm. Lopez has looked really good this spring. I think he probably has the best stuff of this group. But Graveman's had that job before and he's done a good job with it. So,
right. And that's key. If you have closer experience, you have the leg up on yeah. Folks.
And a guy who's gone really late in drafts, who I think has been a really good value for people, but who doesn't really have any track record to speak of, that's Alex Lang in Detroit. So it looks like he's the closer to start the year. And there's not a lot of other elite guys in the back of this bullpen,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he does have decent velo. He is someone who they thought of as a potential guy to go in the back of this bullpen. He has 1 career save in his 99 innings. He gets strikeouts. He walks too many guys. So that's a problem. It's hard to be a closer who walks guys.
It,
so yes, that's the thing. Yes. That's the thing that really concerns me about Lang And if he doesn't have the job, I think it's total crapshoot. Like, mm-hmm. Lord knows, like, Jose Cisnero has been on this team for a while. It could be him, Jason Foley. I'm not watch listing those guys in 12 team leagues, but I'm keeping an eye on that in the 15 teamers. Carlos Estevez in LA, for the Angels, he was brought in to be the closer. He's had an awful, awful spring, mm-hmm. and Angels management has said they're not worried about it, but I'd definitely be taking a look at Jimmy Herget, who they had as a closer towards the end of last year. So, that's a big one. And then finally, as you mentioned, the replacement for Raisel Iglesias, who I'm not sure we know quite how long he'll be out yet, but it's definitely AJ Minter, mm-hmm. with Joe Jimenez being maybe a backup. I mean, as a Tigers guy, I know all about Joe Jimenez. He's not that good. Another very sneaky name, very, very deep leagues. Keep an eye on Kirby Yates, former high-end closer.
Yes.
And Nick Anderson, when he broke out with the Rays, he was a monster. Has mm-hmm. not found that sort of reliability in recent years, but something to keep an eye on, especially if you're in those saves and holds leagues. I think the one guy you can say won't be in the running is Colin McHugh, because I just don't, he's never really held a role like that before. He's someone that they rely on for lots of innings. But yeah, AJ Minter, the lefty, he does look like the start. I am interested to see, though, if other righties get a chance.
Right. And since we're talking, closers and teams that have multiple pitchers that could close for them, you got to mention the Marlins as well. It could be AJ Puck, could be Dylan Floro, Tanner Scott might get a chance. I think it's going to be Floro to open the season, but Puck is going to be right behind him, I think.
Yeah, Floro's the righty, right? Mm-hmm. And righties generally have a big advantage over lefties. AJ Puck, former starting prospect back when he was in Oakland A. I like his stuff the best. I want him to win the job. I'm not sure he will, but definitely someone I'll be rooting for to win that job at the very least. And if he does get the job, I think he'll be very good. Mm-hmm. I think the only other one to really look at would be the Dodgers. So the Dodgers have Evan Phillips really at the top of this list. Keep an eye on Bruster Gratterall.
Mm-hmm.
Bruster and Daniel Hudson is likely to start the season on the IL, but when he comes back, I wouldn't be shocked if they give that the veteran a chance to really win that role as well. I think there's a lot of projection systems that had him originally as the guy. He got mm-hmm. 5 saves last season for the Dodgers, so they're comfortable with him in that role. Pitched really, really well last season, 2.22 ERA, only 24 innings, though. Doesn't have a ton of miles probably left on this 36-year-old arm, but someone that could come in and sweep that job away. Phillips, of course, with the 1.14 ERA last season was just unbelievable. He's probably the guy I want to start, but if he doesn't work out or they decide to use him as a fireman, Bruster Gratterall, former Minnesota Twins prospect, his stuff is just nasty. He throws 9,900 miles per hour all the time. He is someone, and actually, in recent news reports, they've suggested that he might be one of the leading closer candidates because they might use Evan Phillips as a fireman. So definitely someone I'll have on watch list. He throws one of those power sinker kind of things. That's why his strikeout rates aren't as high as you'd think. Sort of like Dustin May, throws this power sinker, doesn't get as many strikeouts as you'd like, but the control is really, really good. And yeah, I think the ratios will be fantastic if he gets that role.
Why don't we keep on going? How about the Phillies? You have, Rob Thompson, their manager, doesn't like to designate one pitcher as their closer. So many managers are going that route, right? Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarado, and then Craig Kimbrell. All three of these guys I just mentioned, even Gregory Soto from the Tigers, they picked him up. So the four guys I just mentioned do have some closer experience. And you just got to wonder if... I kind of like Dominguez, tell you the truth, but I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, to me, it's between Dominguez and Kimbrell, probably. Mm-hmm. Kimbrell, he says he has no issue being, in that closer committee. He's one of, he's one of the best living closers, right? The guy, and he keeps getting saves, right? Like, teams have not really brought him on to not get saves. In 2020, he only got the 2 because he had that really rough year. 2019, really his whole time with the Cubs was bad. But when you look past his years with the Cubs, he still looks like a heck of a pitcher, right? Mm-hmm. The strikeout rate was down last season, but it was still 10.8 guys per 9 innings. He's got at least 20 saves just about every season outside of his 2 years with the Cubs, right? So, I like him again to get 20, and you can get him generally very late in drafts, but you know, again, I think the one guy you can toss out is it's not going to be Gregory Soto. He's a ticking time bomb waiting to happen. He walks way too many guys. He's a lefty. Yeah. Jose Alvarado is a better lefty, right? And then they also have Matt Strom in this bullpen, who I think has great stuff throwing from the left side. So why they wanted Gregory Soto remains a mystery to me, but they've got him, but there's no way he closes.
Right. Last one, then we'll take a quick break. Just some news on Ryan Helsley, the closer for the Cardinals. I thought I read something where Marmol, the manager, had said that he's not going to be pitching 2 days in a row. So that still leaves the door open for Giovanni Gallegos to get a few saves. You know, maybe like a 8 to 10. You know, if Helsley's not going to pitch back to back.
I would say that we need to expect for every team to give about 10 saves away to somebody else. Maybe not one player, but 10 to 15 saves just aren't going to be with the main guy.
Right.
That's just how things work out. Ryan Helsley has had a lot of durability issues in his career. Last season was the first time he pitched over 50 innings on the major league roster. And of course, he was fantastic. 1.25 ERA, 13 strikeouts per 9 innings. 19 saves. He actually didn't have that job to start the year. He got it later on. Most projection systems have him for 25 to 30 saves. I think that's still about right. And here's the thing. Guys don't get back-to-back saves very often, right? You just, they are more often to get one save per week than two. We know that because the top closers only get about 20 to 30 saves, right? Maybe 30 to 35 even for the very best. That's certainly not two a week, right? So him not pitching on back-to-back days, I hope it makes his draft stock fall, because I never count on guys getting, how many saves do you lose if you don't pitch on back-to-back days? How many times did guys even get saves on back-to-back days? It just doesn't happen very often. It's not something that really concerns me much at all. It'll be a very situational thing. If you're playing, you know, if you're streaming for saves, there will be days, especially if you're listening to our First Pitch podcast. It won't be me. During the week, it'll actually be great podcaster, Bubba, Casey Bubba.
That's great news.
Is going to be running the First Pitch podcast during the week. I won't be able to. I've got those twin babies on the way any day now. So I won't be able to do that this season. Maybe next season I can get back to it because I love that podcast. But you need to listen to it all the time. And one part of that podcast is calling out guys who can get vulture saves. Mm-hmm. And if you can, I talk about this with stolen bases and saves. If you can stream one a week in Roto, that's like 25 of each stat.
Right.
And go and look at your standings at the end of last season and see how much 25 changes. Let's say you only get half of them, 13. How many points do you get for 13 more saves or 13 stolen bases by having a 50% success rate streaming one of them a week?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big difference.
Yes. All right. So good stuff. I like your team. I was a little surprised to see Gleyber Torres on there because I know in the past you've been a little wishy-washy on him, and he's very hot and cold. But as a Yankee fan, you know, I support him. But
for 12 bucks, I support him.
I know. No, but I do. I think you drafted a very competitive team, and now both of us got to work on, tweaking it and working the waiver wire, making some trades and whatnot. It's going to be a lot of fun. And
I feel like you're intentionally skipping the reserve round. So this particular auction, we draft the bench. You don't use your money on them. And I think let me just say that this team is me putting my money where my mouth is, which to me is very important in a league like this. So obviously I took my guy, Isak Paredes, for $2. O'Neill Cruz, who I can't stop talking about how much better he got throughout the season last year. I got him for $20 and I liked that. I haven't said many things about Corbin Carroll, but I'm a big Corbin Carroll believer, especially in OBP. So for $20, I felt really good about that. But obviously on the bench, I did take Tarek Skubal. I think he's going to be really good when he gets back, probably in June.
Okay.
And you know, I drafted Akil Baddoo. I'm not doing a podcast without mentioning Akil Baddoo. I did draft Akil Baddoo. I think that he actually has a shot to be the leadoff guy for the Tigers. 12 team leagues, you really just don't need to care. But where, AL only or 15 teamers, I think Akil Baddoo has won a job on this team. And I think he's done it on the large side of the platoon at the top of this lineup. So I think that's something to really pay attention to. Obviously, I'm watching the transaction tracker for the next couple of days. We're going to see teams finally make their final cuts to send guys down. I know Recently, they sent down Will Vest and Donnie Sands, who were two guys I thought might be interesting in the back of that bullpen. Alex Fiedo got sent down. But, you know, there's a great transaction tracker over on FanGraphs. If you go to the roster resource tab, you go to the very bottom, it says transaction tracker. You can see the guys who have been sent down in the last couple of days. And there's a lot of that going on, right? So Brett Batty was sent down on the 25th, big time prospect. Juan Yepes sent down by the Cardinals, which is how Jordan Walker gets his spot. I mean, there was a lot of questions on how that was going to work out. That's one way for that to happen, right? I mean, that's how I'm noticing. You know, Joe Adell was sent down on the 24th, a guy who just can't really seem to make it happen. Forever Rocky Garrett Hampson sent down. Jordan Groshans for the Miami Marlins, I thought he might be interesting if he got a job on that team. He did not. He sent down. Really watch this over the next couple of days, because there's going to be big players who get sent down and you might not catch every tweet, right? Not all of them are going to go are going to hit your timeline, with the Musk calculus, so really pay attention to it. See what happens. Cause it'll also show you guys that, you know, as the season goes on, we'll show you who might be coming up soon or have been sort of pegged as being called up for a future date. It's a great way to find streaming pitchers. Again, this is on FanGraphs on the roster resource section. There's the 2023 transaction tracker. Take a look at that. Use it throughout the season. See who's being called up. See who's being sent down. You'll see surprises. And again, at this time of year, it's a huge piece of news in terms of it's going to, I mean, it's shaking up how rosters go. Particularly again, I mean, we'll talk about, just because I've been a low guy on Jordan Walker, I probably still am. I still think he's at the bottom of this lineup. I still think he's going to share time because there's Nolan Gorman, who probably deserves to see time. Alec Burleson. Probably deserves to see time. That said, and Jordan Walker's probably only really, I mean, and the outfield is full, right? Because if Jordan Walker gets more time, who's he taking it from? He's either got to take it from Dylan Carlson, Tyler O'Neill, or Lars Nootbaar, right? Again, injuries are very possible. They can open all this up, but something to just kind of keep an eye on is, that team, who's coming up and down. If Nolan Gorman or Alec Burleson, they're probably not going to be sent down yet, but if later we see they're getting sent down, that tells you that Jordan Walker is getting more playing time.
Well, Burleson, I think they've informed him that he's made the team. And he's,
these guys are going to make the team, but how long will they stay on the team? That's the other question that I think making the team is one thing, but it's also my issue for Jordan Walker. If he starts slow, I don't think he necessarily will. He's got a ton of talent, but he's 20 years old. If he starts slow, right, and he's only got the 119 games above A ball, right? I mean, that's more than Juan Soto had. And that's, that's more than Akil Baddoo had, but it's something where it could really come up. It could be an issue. So he could get sent down. He's obviously still got tons of options left. It's one thing to make the team. That's a huge step. The reason I have not placed him among my top 15 third basemen is because making the team and staying on the team are just different things.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll continue this. And the couple of second basemen I want to talk about that might have some fantasy value in deep leagues. And Braves completed their rotation. We'll check that out right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. And before the break, we were talking about, teams solidifying their rosters. And this podcast is going to come out Monday, and there's going to be a lot more transactions happening. And so we'll keep track of that. Since our last podcast, a lot of stuff has happened though, Scott. So, you talked about the Cardinals making their moves. Jordan Walker has made the team, and Alec Burleson, who everyone was in on Walker. But when you look at Burleson, man, he's, he had, a power hitting, prospect. Two seasons in the minor leagues, has a 300 batting average, 842 OPS, and lots of power. But you brought up a good point. Making the team is different than, staying on the roster and being successful. Lots of stuff has happened. I mean, Jose Altuve fractured his right thumb after getting hit by a pitch in the World Baseball Classic. And, second base being such a position of scarcity in fantasy – Any interest in David Hansley in a deeper league? Because it looks like he might be getting a lot of the playing time while Altuve recovers. And it looks like he could be out for, I don't know, it depends who you listen to. It could be 8 weeks. So we're talking probably May, June for Altuve.
Yeah, this is probably more of like an NL-only kind of play. Mm-hmm. Hensley is pretty much just a hit tool guy. Doesn't run a lot. I mean, last season in AAA, he did have 10 home runs and 20 steals. So, I mean, that's something. I wouldn't expect that. You know, he has good plate discipline. At least that's what he's shown in the minor leagues. He walks a lot and strikes out a lot. Not a lot, but he does walk and strike out. I think he's someone who in a full season might get to that like 10 home run, 10 stolen base mark. Mm-hmm. And that means his value needs to come all from batting average. So 15 teamers as an emergency middle infield. Sure. Right. But beyond that, not super interested. You know, when it comes to middle infielders, if there's a guy that I think people are paying attention to, and I know you're paying attention to him, it's Anthony Volpe.
Sure. Yeah.
So Anthony Volpe, if you're looking for a middle infielder, of course, Anthony Volpe probably wasn't drafted if you drafted a month ago, because unless you're in like a draft and hold, because we just didn't know if he'd make the team. Now it looks like Oswald Peraza is the odd man out, right? Yeah. He suffered an unfortunate late game injury, which will give, I think, the team an excuse to send him down.
Mm-hmm. I think that the Yankees had made the decision. They're not announcing it, but Volpe's made the team.
You know, obviously he's every bit the prospect Jordan Walker is. Not quite mm-hmm. the same prospect, because Jordan Walker is like this 30 to 35 home run kind of bat as an mm-hmm. upside, whereas Volpe's like a Bo Bichette kind of upside sort of play, and that you could see the 20 home runs, 20 steals, mm-hmm. right, in a full season. I think that's what you're looking for from Volpe. Volpe only has 22 games in AAA, and he did strike out a lot, so I'm interested to see if you know what his strikeout rate looks like early on in the season, because again, making the team and keeping the job is not quite the same, especially on a Yankees team that has a ton of options at shortstop and probably doesn't have a lot of patience. Hmm. Right? I mean, this team needs to win.
Yeah.
So, but again, Volpe, if he wasn't drafted in your league, he needs to be a top priority waiver move because the upside is amazing. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I keep talking about, oh, I'm not really in on Jordan Walker, I mean that relative to my peers, where I'm not drafting him to start on my team as a third baseman. Maybe in my last utility spot, sure. It also means I'm probably not getting him. Volpe, another guy who I don't want as my starting shortstop to start the season in 12 team leagues at all. Mm-hmm. But he's someone, there's only so many prospects worth benching in a 12 team league. Anthony Volpe is one of them.
Yeah.
He is a guy worth stashing on your roster, because if he is, you know, if he can hit the ground running, which again is very difficult to do as a 21-year-old. And mm-hmm. we were just excited about guys like Jared Kelenic, who has had a good offseason. He's had a good spring, but he's struggled at the major league level. That could very well happen to any of them.
Right.
Right. No one is immune to that kind of thing from happening. But I do think he's got a really good shot to be a really good player. He just needs to play pretty much well right off the bat, because mm-hmm. other guys want these spots, right? Yep. Oswaldo Cabrera is a guy they want to get into the lineup, right? And there's ways for them to do that. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is still on this team, and he's going to play sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. So he's someone they really want to get in. Willie Calhoun's making this team, apparently, but that's more funny than it is.
Well, he's had a good spring, and but you know, DJ LeMahieu's there too. He's going to be playing somewhere,
and he might, you know, just to call him out, he might be a leadoff guy for this team. Management has talked about how they like him as the leadoff hitter.
He gets on base,
which is interesting. Yeah, so even if he doesn't have the power that he had in 2019, which mm-hmm. he doesn't.
Who does have the power they had in 2019?
Yeah.
Right? We've talked about 2019.
Yeah. 15 is the absolute hard ceiling for power here. But mm-hmm. you don't care about the home runs, because he could score, I mean, he could score 90 runs, right, mm-hmm. at the top of this lineup. No problem. Yeah. Even mm-hmm. if he doesn't quite play every day. He's also a guy they will use to get other players in the lineup. So with Volpe, I want to see how well he performs. And I want to see how often, you know, in the very first 2 weeks, how often does he sit, mm-hmm. right? Because the other thing is, in weekly leagues, it's really hard to have guys who sit two or three times a week. Volpe is, again, good enough that you probably got to start him anyway, but man, that would not be a good sign to see him sit two or three times in the first week. or two or three times a week. I think that he should be playing every day. And if they can't play him every day because he's struggling against tough righties or things like that, that's another reason they'd send him down, because for his long-term development, he needs to be playing every day. He can't share a job.
Yeah.
Right. So that'll be the other thing I think to watch to see if that happens.
I think if he makes the team, though, he's staying, unless he reaches totally tanks, because, you know, he's the blue chip prospect that the Yanks have. And I think they really believe in him. They're going to have a long leash with him. And I know you're right. You know, they want to win and win now and get off to a good start. But I think they're going to have a long leash with him.
Yeah. And again, you know, just to talk about a guy like Spencer Torkelson, who I like, who's had a great, great spring. He was a guy who, I mean, we did see that the Tigers stuck with him for a long time, and he's absolute, like, he also is on the level, like, this kind of level of prospect, right? Absolute, you know, top tier prospect. They did eventually send him down because he was playing so poorly. So that's the other thing you'll have to do as a fantasy manager, is just kind of decide, like, if he is playing poorly, just because the team's keeping him, should you, right? Mm-hmm. How long can you bench him? How long can you manage him? Just things to keep in mind. That's not really actionable right now. It will be later. And of course, I started all this just to say he should absolutely be at the top of your watch list.
Yeah.
Anthony Volpe and Spencer Torkelson, if he's still out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the time that this podcast debuts, we'll have more information on this. But, you know, a shortstop is even more important now because of the news of Wanda Franco is going to have an MRI on his right quad. And it's really disappointing because, you know, he's had injury issues early in his career, such a top notch hitter, contact skills and whatnot. So you're really hoping that he would be able to play, you know, 140, 150 games a season. Let's not jump to conclusions, but, let's keep an eye on that as well. Go ahead.
And he still could.
Of course.
He could still very well play 140 games, which is probably as much as you wanted to project him for anyway, with a long injury history. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. Any worries about how this would impact his ability to steal bases, I think, is offset by the change in rules and how aggressive his team is on the bases. So I still, you know, as of right now, I'm still trying to hold that 130 to 140 game line where he gets close to 15 home runs, close to 15 stolen bases, a bunch of counting stats because he'll be in the middle of this lineup and he's a good hitter. And of course, a batting average that's, you know, north of 280, if not 300.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael Massey is another guy. If you're looking for a middle infielder replacement, Royal second baseman, power speed combination in three minor league seasons, 294 batting average with 862 OPS, played 52 games for the Royals last season, kind of held his own, you know, four home runs, three stolen bases, a 243 batting average. Didn't go crazy, but, has a good pedigree. And, you know, just talking about the middle infield and second base position, because that's what Michael Massey is, a second baseman. Were you shocked when Vaughn Grissom got sent down?
I was. I was, because Orlando Arcia, he doesn't mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. He's not interesting. He's not fun. This is a team that I think absolutely could have had Grissom. This is probably to work on his glove and to work on a few other things. I do think he'll be up very quickly. And when he is, you need to scoop him up. So watch that transaction tracker. Yeah. Look for when Vaughn Grissom comes up, because I think that he'll be a big impact. For Michael Massey, man, if he can get towards the top of this lineup, which I'm not sure how he does that, I'd like him a lot more, but he is someone who I think could be, you know, if he plays the full season, I think he probably will. Mm-hmm. Right. Right now they show him as maybe on a platoon with a guy like Matt Duffy, but why would the Royals care about what Matt Duffy brings to the table? Hmm. Right. I mean, this is a guy. I mean, he's a guy to fill in for them when Hunter Dozier needs a day off. But you know, so we'll see how it goes with Michael Massey. I don't think Nicky Lopez is a threat, because they're both left, you know, they're both already left-handed and they know what they have in Nicky Lopez, but Michael Massey, I think, is a guy who, if he played a full season, there's like 20 home run, 10 stolen base upside in a full season, which, again, in a 12-team league is more of like a streamer, especially at the bottom of a Royals lineup where it's hard for him to get any real counting stats. But in a 15-team league or something where, you know, you need the second baseman, shortstop, and middle infielder and things like that with these deeper rosters, there's definitely value because he's going to play. I just don't think the Royals need to see anything else from these other guys on their bench, right? Like, What on earth are Jackie Bradley Jr., Franmil Reyes, and Matt Duffy doing on this roster? I mean, maybe Franmil Reyes, because he's not quite 28, and I guess he'd be a power bat in a park that is one of the worst parks for him to go to because it suppresses power so much. But why is this happening? Why is this team doing this? I was bummed to see Drew Waters get hurt. That's probably why Jackie Bradley Jr. and Franmil Reyes are on this roster. But come on, man. Like, there's nothing you need to learn. It's just going to be a reason for them to jerk around Edward Olivares all over again.
I agree with you. The players you just mentioned probably shouldn't be, you know, have a big role in a team that's rebuilding like the Royals. You know, you need to see what you have with the young core group on your team. So, you know, Luis Severino going down with a low-grade right lat strain, which is, look at all the injuries the Yankees have had. But the Braves announced that Kyle Wright's going to open the season on the IL, and that opens up two spots in their rotation. Jared Schuster got a lot of helium. I drafted him in a couple of leagues, had a big spring, 18 strikeouts, 4 walks. So I believe he's going to be their SP3. And then that leaves the door open for Dylan Dodd to make the team and open the season in their rotation. And he's another guy that had a big spring, 20 strikeouts and 4 walks as well. So if you're looking for, you know, pitching help, these two guys might, you know, suffice.
Yeah, I've probably got them more as like streamers for the first 2 weeks. I think Kyle Wright probably comes back after the minimum stay. That's the way it's sounding right now. And again, early in the season, we see lots of, you know, postponements. We see lots of games delayed in the middle of the game. It's hard to say exactly how long some of these guys will be in, because even if you slate Dodd for 2 turns in the rotation, will it actually be 2 turns? Because they will totally skip him if they get stuck with a day off. Right. So something to think about, because they're not going to, you know, they're not going to start Dodd when it's Fried's 5th day. Right. Or Charlie Morton's 5th day.
Right.
I just don't see them doing that. So, you know, Jared Schuster, not to be confused with American curling gold medalist John Schuster.
I'm sure a lot of people were confused. Yes.
Look, the curling season is over, so I gotta fit it in where I can. But, you know, Jared Schuster, a guy who I think is definitely interesting, because even when Kyle Wright comes back, I think Schuster stays in. You know, we already saw a couple other guys hit the IL. We saw Mike Soroka got optioned down. So, you know, he's someone who hasn't really pitched meaningful innings in the majors since 2019. So I was interested to see what would happen with him, but he's been coming back from injury, so it won't be his year. He did have a crazy 2.68 ERA, Mike Soroka, back in 2019. In all years to have a great ERA, it was 2019.
But, yeah, right.
You know, it just hasn't worked out for him since. So I think Schuster's the one you want to target. Questions as to how many guys he'll actually strike out. 48.2 innings in AAA last season, after, you know, tons of strikeouts in A and AA. But then in AAA, they really slowed down. I don't know the reason for that. I did not really have any eyes on him. So I'm curious to see if that's because he ran into better hitters who wouldn't go after some of his off-speed stuff, or if it's something else. So, you know, obviously Jared Schuster won this spot over Ian Anderson. So he's the one I think long-term you want to look at. And I'll definitely be listening to see what Nick has to say about Jared Schuster as we go, because I think all of us are kind of one. You know, he's a big question mark. And again, 12 team leagues, maybe a streamer depending on the early schedule, but someone you definitely want to keep your eye on.
I think Nick picked him up in your league, so I think he's going to give him a shot. So,
I mean, for a dollar, sure.
Yeah. Right. Dollar and a dream. That's all it takes, right? Last player I want to talk about, due to the injury that Rhys Hoskins, first baseman for the Phillies, suffered, torn ACL. Suffered the injury on a non-contact play. So Derek Hall all of a sudden has some potential fantasy value. Hit 37 home runs between his time in AAA and the Phillies last season. So big power bat. I think he's probably like a 240, 250 hitter, but like I said, a lot of power.
240, 250 would be great. You know,
Derek, I'm optimistic.
Yeah. So Derek Hall is large. You know, they're saying he's going to get the majority of the playing time. He's probably going to look more like a large side of the platoon. He is just a classic lefty masher, right? If, you know, in terms of like, they don't look the same, but if you just like swapped this stat, you know, if you swapped his stat line with, you know, any other big lefty masher, you'd probably get about the same thing. He doesn't walk as much. Mm-hmm. I would like to see him walk more. That's how guys like Danny Vogelbach get more relevance, right? Because Vogelbach is this lefty matcher, strikes out way too much, but at least he walks, right? He gets on base. The OBP is great. You don't see that with Derek Hall. Derek Hall is going to strike out probably around 25 to 30% of the time, but he's going to hit a bunch of bombs. And if I had, you know, I'm trying to think of a player who I would comp him to. And although he's right-handed, it's going to feel like Patrick Wisdom.
Oh boy.
Okay. Maybe a few, like a little bit less strikeouts, right? Mm. Hopefully, but that's kind of what you're looking at. You're looking at a low batting average and a bunch of home runs.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, Patrick Wisdom is mean because he strikes out like more than 30% of the time, and I don't think Hall will do that, but it'll be close.
He struck out 31% of the time in 42 games, but when you look at his numbers in the minor leagues, they're more in the, you know, like the low 20 to mid 20 range in terms of his strikeout rate. So, yeah, he likes to swing the bat, but like I said, got a lot of power. So,
yeah, this was not enough. So I, you know, just to plug it out there while we're getting towards the end of the show, I did the first hitter list of the season. It came out on Friday.
Awesome.
So it's out there. This news was not enough for me to care. Derek Hall is not on this list because I don't think there's a lot of long-term upside. If I was to put him on there, it might be in place of a guy like Eric Hosmer or Brandon Belt, but those guys might actually have other things, you know, depending on your league or format, those guys might even be a little more interesting to you. Trey Mancini, because I think he's got more upside than Derek Hall is a one trick pony. It's all power.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. So we're going to see live baseball action this week, opening day later this week. And Scott, it's been great. You could follow my friend Scott Chu at If the Chu Fits. You can follow me at Joe Galina. And Scott, my best to you. Hopefully, you know, we're taking it week by week with you and your wife and the impending pregnancy, the birth of your twins. So,
We'll see how it goes. We might miss a week for that, but otherwise we'll still be around. I'm still doing the hitter list. I'll have someone fill in for me for when that happens, but please go check it out. Let me know what you think. The one thing I'll say is you'll see a ranking change, even though it's my first one. It's a change from the preseason rankings I did. Players that made huge jumps from. So I did a hitter list back at the end of the season last year. Mm-hmm. And the guys that moved up the most are Corbin Carroll. He moved up like 50 slots. He's inside the top 40. Tyler O'Neill is just outside the top 50. He moved up 41 slots. Brandon Lau. 51 slots. He went up. He's in my, you know, he's at ranked 80. Masataka Yoshida, of course, was not on my radar at that time. So he moved way up. And just, you know, a couple other guys that were unrated that moved way up. I think Adam Duvall, not unlike Derek Hall, except more proven power than Derek Hall. Someone to keep in mind, Tyler Stevenson, the catcher. I think he's got the most upside of any catcher outside the top five.
Agreed.
So he's someone you should really be keeping an eye on. And then I think the other name I wanted to call out was Brendan Donovan, who might actually lead off for those Cardinals. I don't think there's going to be a lot of power there. He's like a 10 to 12 home run guy, but he's got that Luis Arraez, Jeff McNeil sort of skill set, which at the top of a team of a lineup for a team like the Cardinals could really turn into some fantasy gold there. And he's eligible all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Important. All right. So we'll be looking for that. And I guess that just slams the lid on things for this week. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.